Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Kimberly Stewart, who reads from and discusses her new book, Eating Between the Lines, The Supermarket Shopper's Guide to the Truth Behind Food Labels, published by St. Martin's Press. In the weeks to come, we have Sophie Kinsella, Arthur Agatston, Tracy Chevalier, Rachel Johnson, Jonathan Lethem, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover, it is my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for supporting independent bookselling. Kimberly Lord Stewart takes the guesswork out of one of the most important things we do each week, grocery shopping. In these days of overwhelming choices and packaging proclaiming high promises, this new book, Eating Between the Lines, helps readers bring the best possible foods to their kitchens. And who else could provide such a wonderful resource? Kim is a columnist for Natural Home Magazine and editor-in-chief of Dining Out Magazine. She is the recipient of two Association of Food Journalism Awards for food news reporting and the Jesse Neer Business Journalism Award in 2002. We are so delighted to welcome her to the Tattered Cover and her wonderful new book to our shelves. Please welcome Kimberly Lord Stewart.
Do a little housekeeping. Can you hear me? Okay, because I have a very soft voice. So my staff, you can't hear me? Louder. Let me move closer. My staff would argue, but I have a very soft voice, I think. Can I do that? Very good. Here we go. Okay. So good evening. Thank you so much for being here. This is my first Denver book signing. The book has been out for about 10 days. It's gotten a very good response so far, and I thank you so much for being here. Grocery shopping is no longer as simple as deciding what's for dinner. There are hundreds of different products that we must, there are hundreds of different products and decisions that we have to make before we pull a product off the shelf and put it into our cart. I think we all start our shopping trip with an empty cart full of really good intentions. And by the time we get to aisle 3 or 4, we look down in the bottom of the cart and we think, how did that get there? What is that? So perhaps the best illustration of this is where the book, where the idea for the book came about. I was in my local King Soopers in Longmont, where I live. And I had just returned from winning an award for coverage of fraud in the olive oil industry. And kind of a controversial topic, it's in the book. And I was picking out my favorite brand. And while I was in the aisle, there was a woman standing there with her glasses perched on her nose with two bottles, one in each hand, trying to read the extra virgin olive oil label. Grab my favorite brand, off I went. About 15 minutes later, I came back by the aisle and she was still there with that same look on her face. So I said, I feel your pain. Can I help you with this? And she said, do you know something about this? And I said, as a matter of fact, I do. I know a lot about this. So I walked her through the ins and outs of buying extra virgin olive oil. And she said, my doctor told me to switch to a Mediterranean diet. And in his office, it seemed like a fairly easy thing to do. And now that I'm in the store, your help has just been amazing. Thank you very much. She said, could you go grocery shopping with me all the time? And I said, well, you know, that's really not a good use of my time, but I could write a book. Would you buy it? And she said, yes, I would buy it. So unfortunately, I don't know where she is. Hopefully, she'll buy the book. So the last time I was at a book signing in the audience, it was for Marley and Me. Do you know the lovely book about the Labrador Retriever? And at the book signing, there were beautiful little Labrador service dogs all over the place, little puppies. And that was when I thought, well, I guess if I'm going to be doing this, I need a prop. So I have my prop. Just a moment. So this is my prop. This is Rosie. This is Rosie, the antibiotic-free, hormone-free, free-range, cage-free chicken. Okay? So before I begin, I need a volunteer before I begin reading from chapter 3. And I need a volunteer. I need a committed couple. I don't care whether you're married or not. I just need a couple who grocery shop together. Would you like to be our volunteers? Okay. All right. I have some labels here. And let's say you were buying Rosie. And I need you to both decide, as a couple, which of these labels you would look for in the grocery store. So we have, okay.
And we have to agree, huh?
You have to agree. So we have free range, natural, cage-free, no antibiotics, and no hormones.
Well, of course, natural seems to cover all of those, but it probably doesn't. Since I haven't read your book yet. What do you think?
Oh, go for natural. It's a separate thing.
You can pick more than one, by the way, because there are multiple labels on all of these products. So pick as many as you think are relevant. Okay. Okay.
So if you get the inner animal right,
yeah.
Come out.
Because I did read that part of your book. They're not all free range.
Okay.
So we probably don't need natural then, right?
Okay. Well, let's stick with natural. That's okay. All right. So we have natural. Okay. No antibiotics. Cage free. And no hormones. Okay? All right. Now, I'm going to read from chapter 3, Hatching Profits Chicken Labeling. Tastes like chicken, but is it hormone-free? I tried to ignore it, but I couldn't help it. There it sat. Chicken, lots of it. All neatly stacked in the grocery cart in front of me. The red, yellow, and blue packaging caught my eye among the baby lettuce, heirloom apples, soy smoothies, and organic blue corn tortilla chips. Confrontation is not my strong suit. Still, I blurted out, "Why do you buy that brand of chicken?" 20 years ago, the man attached to the shopping cart might have taken it for a pickup line. Instead, today, he looked offended, and rightfully so. I live near Boulder, Colorado, where what one eats defines a person as much as his or her house, clothes, or car. Boulderites are passionate about health, fitness, and environmentalism, including organic agriculture. Stand on any street corner and you'll likely hear a group of people just finishing an afternoon run discussing what to do for dinner, perhaps dining at a sustainable restaurant or grabbing something at Whole Foods or Wild Oats. So as one might imagine, this handsome, ponytailed, Teva, Patagonia-clad 20-something man looked at me as if I had accused him of the worst possible crime. When he realized I wasn't going away, he admitted, "My wife tells me to buy it. She says it's healthier because it doesn't have added hormones." "None of them do," I said. "But that costs more than the other brands. He bought the chicken anyway. Naturally, it was safer for him to listen to his wife than a nosy stranger in the checkout line. Sir, whoever you are, wherever you are, consider this a public apology for my behavior. After all, you were listening to your wife, a commendable, although ill-informed, decision. I could name drop and tell you the brand, but it's irrelevant since all hormones were banned in poultry operations in the late 1950s. Not that they didn't try. After trial and error, producers discovered that hormones create soft chicken meat. It doesn't help much with growth during a chicken's short lifespan. This little-known fact hasn't kept producers from trying to convince you that their chicken is superior because it has no added hormones. Marketers are smart enough not to put hormone-free on the packaging, since USDA won't allow it unless there's a disclaimer about the prohibited use. The writer doesn't make for very compelling copy. But since the Federal Trade Commission isn't as stringent about its enforcement, the no hormones claim makes for very profitable advertising. Don't buy into it. The real sham is that niche companies charge as much as $3 more per pound for essentially the very same product other conventional producers offer. Don't be fooled. Remember that no poultry operations, large or small, use hormones. Therefore, the labels no added hormones, no added steroids, are simply reiterations of a policy that exists for all poultry producers. So don't pay more for hormone-free chicken. So whose idea was it to buy hormone-free chicken? I don't remember when. It was your idea. As you should. So do you feel duped? I know I did. While I was writing the egg chapter for this book, I was working from home and there was a knock on my door. It was a salesman, and he was trying to convince me to change dairy companies. I have milk delivered to my home from Longmont Dairy every Friday morning, and he was from the competition. Just as I was going to close the door in his face, he said, "We have hormone-free eggs." And I opened the door back up. Now, remember, I was writing the egg chapter. I said, "Could you say that again?" And he said, "We have hormone-free eggs." I'm sure he thought he had a sale. He thought, "Oh, I've got her. And I said, "You picked the wrong house to try that one on." And he looked at me and said, "What?" I said, "Well, all eggs are hormone-free." And he said, "No, they're not." And we stood there and argued with one another. So it's a very common labeling term. You'll see it absolutely everywhere, on pork, poultry, and eggs. But they are not allowed in either of those three sectors in the industry. Another example, last summer I was at a cocktail party for the Organic Farming Research Foundation. It was the end of the evening, the diehards were left, and I went around and asked them that one question. These are people who've been in the natural products industry for 20 years. And I said, "Do you buy hormone-free chicken?" And they all said yes. And these are people who I consider their opinions very valuable to me in my research. So it's a very common mistake. Before we get to the questions, when you read this book, it is not meant to be read from front to back. Okay? There's a lot of information in the book. It can be a little overwhelming. The book is meant to be digested in small bites. Each chapter can be read independently. You don't have to read it from front to back. If you're interested in dairy, read the dairy chapter first. If you're interested in produce, read the produce chapter first. Okay? And in the back of the book, can I borrow somebody's? Can I borrow your book for just a second? Thank you. And in the back of the book are summaries of all the chapters. And these are meant to be photocopied, clipped out, and kept in your wallet. So let's say you're interested in organic produce and you can't remember the foods with the highest residues. Photocopy this chart, clip it out, put it in your wallet so when you're grocery shopping, you can use that. There's a chart for every chapter in the book. Okay? The other important thing to remember, thank you, is that I wrote this book not to tell you what is important to me. I wrote this book for you to decide what is important for you in the grocery store. We all come to the dinner table with different values. Might be budget, It might be convenience. It might be health. It might be children. It might be other issues such as animal welfare claims and environmental issues. So my idea was not to impose my values on you, the reader. Okay? Lastly, although there are times I wish potato chips were a health food, there is no amount of labeling that you will read that will make that potato chip healthy. Okay? Once you've read the book, I guarantee that you will be able to narrow down your choices and ignore about 75% of what's in the grocery store, because you will learn to outsmart the marketers. Okay? I guarantee it. When I go grocery shopping, although my husband would... I spend a lot of time in the grocery store, as you can imagine. but if this weren't my job, I could jump in and out of the grocery store because I know what's important to me, and I know which labels have some integrity behind them and which ones are just simply marketing terms. So that is my goal, and that is what I hope you get from the book. So does anyone have any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. You have to clip out the coffee and tea section.
Mm-hmm.
You have eco-friendly and socially conscious. Does that mutually exclude each other then?
Hang on just a second. So I'm going to repeat the question because we're podcasting this. So the page again was?
Page 302.
Okay. Oh, no, they're not mutually exclusive there. The most of the socially conscious labels that you'll see, the Fair Trade label, the Starbucks Cafe label, and the Coffee Kids label, they have a component of environmentalism as part of their label as well, but their focus is more socially in helping these villages with... whatever is necessary, whatever they need in their in these coffee growing villages. So when you read the chapter, it'll make a little bit more sense.
They are not so interested in the villages.
Right. They're interested in the environmentally friendly growing methods. So many of these products have more than one label on them. So you'll see organic and you'll see fair trade. Very common. Yes, sir.
Back to the chicken. What does natural mean?
Ah, here we go. Okay. What does natural mean? It depends on what store you're in, and it depends on what brand you're buying. Okay? Let me walk you through this. If you're in Whole Foods or Wild Oats, there are standards experts in those stores that make a lot of the decisions for you. So they're going to make sure that the poultry in those stores, there's no antibiotics used. They're going to make sure that the feed is vegetarian, and they're going to make sure that the living conditions are more than adequate. Okay? In a conventional grocery store, this word means no additives or preservatives. That's it. It's a post-processing term. So it means nothing was added to the meat. Okay? The problem we have at the moment is that you have the natural brands from the health food stores sitting side by side with the conventional brands in the conventional grocery stores. So, as a consumer, it's very difficult to know which natural that product is. So you're going to see a lot of disclaimers, for instance, on, I call them beyond natural brands in the book. So those labels, for instance, are going to say no antibiotics. They're going to say maybe free range. You're going to see words to further describe that meaning of natural. USDA was just here about 3 weeks ago. They were visiting with Colorado ranchers and livestock producers to come up with a stricter definition of natural. I don't know if you know the Coleman family, familiar with Coleman beef, Coleman natural meats. Mel Coleman Sr., in the late 1970s, early 80s, approached USDA about this strict definition of natural. And USDA bought into it for a couple of weeks. And then industry pressure grew, and USDA rescinded the definition. So now they're back in Colorado because consumer interest is growing, and a lot of it, to be quite honest, is here in this state. So we are a bellwether state for these types of labels. So they're here to see what the response is. Anybody else? Yes. The book took me 2 years to write. It's taken me about 10 years of being a food journalist to collect the information and to really have a sense for this subject. I started my career rather late. I was in my mid-30s, and I had two young children, and I went back to school to be a journalist, and I studied health sciences with that, so I had a split major. When I approached the book I approached it first as a consumer and secondly as a parent. What would I want as a parent and a consumer? What would I want in a book like this? There are a lot of other books written on this topic, but they're written from an academic perspective, and they're hard to get through. They were very hard for me to get through, and I know something about this topic. So I wanted to write a book that was friendly, that was easy to understand, that no matter where you're entering the grocery store from, whether it's you're maybe young and you're shopping for the first time by yourself, or perhaps you're shopping for a family, or I'm almost an empty nester, I wanted the book to appeal to a broad group of people. Yes, sir. Are you interested in nitrate-free? Would that be an interest of yours? There are brands. There are concerns about nitrates and potentially stomach cancer, I think, is one of the major concerns. And I am not a registered dietitian. But I can tell you that there are some pork brands that do not use nitrates. Coleman is one of them. You can buy them in King Soopers. There are turkey bacon brands in Whole Foods. Can you answer that? Lee works at Whole Foods, and off the top of your head. I think uncured Applegate, isn't it Applegate? Yeah, I think Applegate brand has an uncured bacon. They have pork and turkey bacon uncured. But you'll have to, although Applegate is now in King Soopers, aren't they? So I would check Whole Foods, Wild Oats, and King Soopers for an uncured turkey bacon. And then if you're interested in pork, there is the Coleman brand that is nitrate-free. It depends on how it's cured, but nitrates are usually involved in curing. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir? Oh, there is no pork in turkey bacon, no. Mm-mm. Yes? What was the second question? I'm sorry, I missed it. What surprised me? Probably the chapter that had the most impact on me as a writer and was most surprising was the coffee chapter. It involved my teenage son. I didn't expect to be writing about this. In fact, I saved the coffee chapter until the last chapter because I just wasn't sure where I wanted to go with it. And my son Ian is 18 years old, and he does a lot of mission work. And he was in Mexico cleaning up along the border, picking up trash with our church group. And while they were there, they came upon some people trying to cross. And they confronted one another, and there they were in the middle of the desert. And this was the week the Minutemen started their activities in the area. So it was very stressful and very tense. While they were talking, a Border Patrol helicopter came down on the top of them, and they hit the dirt. And you'll have to read the coffee chapter to read more of it, but I'm going to leave it there. But that chapter is a really good example of how our food choices affect other people's lives. So I would say the coffee chapter. Yes, sir. Any food that grows in the ground, carrots, potatoes, onions, are more prone to pesticide residue. You'll see in the list, some of that is residual pesticides from the 70s, DDT, all kinds of things that we've long since banned. But the first part of your question, that's interesting. I haven't heard that. I eat organic potatoes. I eat organic celery. Celery is very porous. And I don't eat organic broccoli. Doesn't seem to be a problem. It's kind of has a natural pesticide component to it. So I really pick and choose the foods that I buy organically, because I would rather save my money to go buy a nice bar of fair trade chocolate, to be honest. So I kind of gauge what I'm going to buy. Yes, ma'am. Yes, it's in the first chapter, in the produce chapter. I started out my career as a Pan Am flight attendant. I'm dating myself. That sparked an interest in culture and food, I think. I was 19 years old. I was living all over the world, traveling all over the world. It was an amazing time. My parents were diplomats in Europe, so it was a very cosmopolitan sort of lifestyle for a 19-year-old to be living. I thought I wanted to be a nutritionist. For years, I thought, that's the path I'm going to take. Had children, married a Navy pilot. We moved around a lot, so I was going to school wherever we lived, just trying to keep this all pulled together. When we arrived here in Colorado, I thought, okay, this is it. I'm going to become a nutritionist. Enrolled full-time in school, started the classes, got halfway through them and said, this is boring. This is way too clinical for me. I had had a catering business. I was very interested in food, but it was just too clinical. I just couldn't stick with it. So I switched to journalism, and I kept the health sciences classes going, and I had this split major. When you start a career in your mid-30s, you have to play catch-up really, really fast. So I went to a publishing company in Boulder called New Hope Natural Media, and they are the leading publishing company for the natural products industry. They sponsor the major trade shows for the industry, and they have magazines for the trades, they have magazines for physicians. And I went to them and said, okay, I will work for you for 6 months for free. I don't recommend this, but I did it. I worked for them for 20 hours a week for free for 6 months to learn this business as quickly as I could. After the 6 months was over, they hired me, and within 5 years, I was the editor-in-chief of a website and a magazine, so I moved up the ladder really quickly. But I learned a lot in that 5 years. So that's where my interest, it's been a long road. Yes, ma'am.
Do you know
if there's any way to test soil? The cooperative extension. Any cooperative, CSU, Cooperative Extension Office, will do that for you. The question is about trans fats. When you look at a label, this is a very important point in the book. FDA allows manufacturers to label their products as trans fat free if they have 0.5 grams or less of hydrogenated fats. If you eat more than a single serving, you're going to get obviously more than that 0.5 grams. And if you eat a lot of different foods that say trans fat free that are not indeed trans fat free, you really need to pay attention to it. In Canada, they've recently passed a law that says 0.2 grams instead of 0.5. FDA is thinking about it. They're thinking about dropping it down to 0.2 grams. but I haven't seen that happen yet. And it was a big expense for the manufacturers to create this 0.5 gram rule. So now I'm sure if they tried to impose a 0.2 gram, I just can't imagine the backlash that they would get. So read the ingredient panel. Look at the list of ingredients. Cereals are a big, this is where I'm a real stickler. There are some cereals labeled as heart healthy that have hydrogenated fats in them, because the American Heart Association is waiting for FDA to actually decide how much trans fats are okay for us to eat on a daily basis. And until FDA does this, they're going to continue allowing this in their certification process. So be very careful of these heart-healthy cereals, especially the ones that have clusters, you know, those crunchy little clusters that taste so good. They use hydrogenated fats to stick those clusters together. Okay, one of the brands I really like is Kashi. Kashi Go Lean Crunch has that nice cluster feel to it that some of those other cereals have, but it doesn't have hydrogenated fats in it. Yes, sir. The question is, what will the long-range and short-term change be now that Whole Foods and Wild Oats are merging? I cannot tell you how long that rumor has been going around. I think that rumor has been going around for more than 5 years, I think. And today it finally happened, so it'll be interesting to see. Yes, sir. Right. There are no portion laws, so to speak. There's no laws on the books that say this is a single portion. FDA is reviewing that. It's probably the biggest consumer complaint that there is. Beverages are another one. You have these tall beverages that are not resealable, that are 2 and 3 and 4 servings, especially for teenagers. I often teach teenagers about beverages, and invariably someone will bring in a big huge drink and, you know, it'll start this discussion, and often they don't really comprehend how much sweetener is in that beverage. So I have baggies of sweetener, and I say, how much is this? How much sweetener is this? And they have no idea. And I say, this is 39 grams, the same amount that's in a 12-ounce soda. And they, luckily for these kids, they don't know what grams are, because I say you either know it from chemistry or you're into drugs. So I'm kind of glad you don't know what grams are. But they have no. I say, how much is this? And they all throw out numbers. I say, all right, this is 9 to 10 teaspoons of sugar. I said, would you put this much in your Starbucks coffee or on your morning cereal? And they're like, no, what about iced tea? Like, no, it's the same, 39 grams. What about lemonade? No, it's the same, 39 grams. So visually, I don't think they have a good idea of what a single portion is of anything any longer, because we've supersized everything. And we've made these portion scams. You'll see it in the bakery aisle. You'll see brownie mixes, that sort of thing. They'll say reduced fat, and all they've done is cut the portion size down.
So is there something we should be encouraging?
FDA is looking into it. I would send your comments in, send your letters in to FDA. You can get online, and I don't know if you're familiar with how the organic certification standards happen, but there were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of letters that were sent in. Yes, probably. They definitely have a lot of conflicts going on between the industry and consumers. In my opinion, if we vote with our dollar, we're going to see more change. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Uh-huh. You've just opened a huge can of worms. The question is, how do you distinguish what is a refined sugar? There are hidden sugars that are allowed to be in products, dextrose, maltose, anything with an ose on the end of it. Those are all sugars, but they don't have to be listed in the sugar grams on the nutrition facts panel. So there's a lot of cereals, particularly children's cereals. A few years ago, I think General Mills came out with, oh, we've reduced the sugar in our cereal. When they did that, the carbohydrate jumped up. And there was, in fact, she was a Navy wife in San Diego, and she figured it out. She said, wait a minute. I think all they've done is replace this refined sugar with one of these OSes. And she actually sued the company. And I'm not sure where the suit is at the moment. But beware of OSe, anything with an OSe. There's things like evaporated cane sugar. It's the same thing as sugar. It's just a different process. High fructose corn syrup. There's a big section in my book about that. So those are the main words I would look for. Good luck. I commend you. That's very honorable. Yes, sir. I'm not a registered dietitian, but this is what I know. Sugar alcohols are actually pretty expensive to manufacture. They come from plants. They're derived from plant sources. And a new product just came out. I just got a free sample called Z-Sweet. It's an erythritol product. I tried it. I've just started using it. It's kind of interesting. Remember that sugar alcohols are not calorie-free. And they can cause gastric upset if you eat too many of them. So those are the two areas that I've looked into the most. But they are not cheap at all. They're quite expensive, actually, to produce.
Do you recommend avoiding them?
I think it just depends on your system. The natural products industry, I know, is in discussions about whether they should be allowed in Whole Foods and Wild Oats. Some say yes, some say no. There are, on one fence, there are people who say they are a natural product, and then there are others who say no, that they shouldn't be allowed, that they're too overly processed. So I don't have an opinion one way or the other on them at the moment. Yes, sir. No, but I'm thinking it's an energy drink. Spike, is it an energy drink? They went to the hospital because of caffeine?
Caffeine, taurine.
Amongst
other
interesting.
It was on NPR's drive home this evening.
I'll have to look into that. I wasn't aware of that. I do have a section in here on energy drinks and for children to be cautious and for parents to be aware of what's in some of these drinks. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Agave is from the same plant that tequila is made out of. There was recently a story on it that it doesn't affect blood sugar as much as refined sugar. So I haven't really looked into the research yet, but it's an interesting new product. And Madhava, do you know Madhava Honey? They're in Lyons. They are one of the major producers of agave. And I'm seeing it more and more in drinks, in the beverage market. Yes, sir.
How does honey match other sugars?
I'm all over honey. I love honey. It has antibacterial properties. It's probably one of the better sweeteners to use if you're an athlete. It works well if you're a runner. No, I'm a real fan of honey. In fact, I have a whole chapter on honey and the importance of bees to our farming system. And we are in peril of really damaging our farming system because beekeepers are losing their bees at a really high rate.
They still have that mite?
They still have the mite. Mm-hmm. And there are researchers in Arizona who are working now to overcome that. And they're making some good progress. But one of the problems really is that our honey industry has not been well supported until recently. We've had a lot of price dumping from China and Argentina, and beekeepers have gone out of business. And it's one thing when we lose honey. It's quite another when we lose bees. So I have an entire chapter dedicated to the American honey industry. So my best advice is to buy U.S.-made honey. Look for USA brand honey. Steve?
What is sugar?
It's what is a sugar alcohol? Everything has sugar in it. We're all made of carbon and sugar, and there are certain plants where they're able to extract these sugar alcohols. Palm, there's some tree bark. They come from some pretty bizarre sources. And they were derived out of the natural products industry, really, I think, is where this research came from. And I think they're the next big thing in the sweetener industry. No, they're a little different. I would say chemically they're different because they're naturally derived. So, yes, ma'am.
Do you have any kids like to cook, and do you find that they read labels now more because of your book?
They do. Do my kids like to cook was the first question. I have a 22-year-old and an 18-year-old. And my 22-year-old son is graduating in May from University of Colorado with a business degree, and he just announced that he wants to be a chef. Yeah. You don't mean that, Dan. He's looking for an apprenticeship. Are you? Okay, I will. My other son is a musician. He's college shopping at the moment, looking at various schools. He's all about the drama of cooking, so he likes to get in the kitchen and pretend that he's some foreign chef with an accent, and, you know, he's all about the drama of it. But my youngest son reads labels, and he teaches his friends how to read labels. So we have a lot of unusual brands in our house, and at lunchtime, and they're like locusts. These teenage boys show up and just, you know, raid the cupboard, and they pull out brands like, "What is this?" And I can hear them in my office, and they converse about what these foods are. So it's good. A couple of years ago, when the trans fat rule came out, my son, we were grocery shopping, and he threw in the cart. Oh, goldfish! He threw some goldfish in the cart, and I said, get it out. Those have trans fats. He said, "No, Mom, look, they took them out." He held up the label and said, "See, they took them out." So so I have hope that he's learning. So, yes, sir?
I can't decide what a real thing.
Right. I have my husband is groaning because this was the hardest chapter to write. And I can tell you that I cannot answer this question succinctly. You have to read the entire chapter. From a taste perspective, I'm all about wild salmon. I think it tastes much better. From a farming perspective, the farm salmon industry has cleaned up their act somewhat. They've reduced the amount of heavy metals in the feed. They're going more with grain-based feed and fish oil-based feed to help solve that problem. There's still problems with pollution. With any time you have that many fish in one place, there's a lot of waste. And so that problem really hasn't been solved.
Prisons.
Exactly, these little salmon prisons that are all over British Columbia. There's no easy answer for this one. Although, I have spoken with NOAA about their new fish farming methods, and they have some fantastic technology that they've developed that is pollutant-free, where the fish are fed based on they can somehow sense through biofeedback when these fish are hungry, and so they only feed them as necessary instead of just dumping massive amounts of food. It's unbelievable. In the book, I say, think of where we would be now had we started with this science. My biggest disappointment in the fish farming industry is they didn't learn from the poultry industry and the beef industry, that they just sort of jumped into this without really any regard for the health of our seas. And it's coming along, but it should have started a decade ago, to be quite honest. You guys want to answer that? This is my dining out staff here. I think if you don't want to know, don't ask. The New York trans fat rules are interesting. I think, to be honest, that law in itself will change food manufacturing because it's forcing these food service contractors to come up with better ways to produce their food. So I think that's a real positive change. So I don't know that the entire country will go trans fat free in a restaurant. I don't know. Do you guys have a sense of that? I don't think it's going to happen. But I do think it's a positive change that we'll have new product innovations. For instance, a couple of weeks ago, I got a call from a friend of mine who helps with commercial food kitchens. And she was looking for a trans fat free shortening that these companies could use. And I hooked them up with a company that I use that I really like. And when they called this gentleman, he said, I can't keep up with demand. He said, the demand has just skyrocketed, and I cannot come up with enough trans fat free shortening right now to satisfy the demand. So, Jeff. The question is non-fat heavy cream. It's non-fat half and half, I think is what it is. It's non-fat half and half. They use cornstarch and sugars to thicken it up. Same thing you might use in the kitchen if you were making some sort of a sauce. It's kind of the same science. Anybody else?
Kim, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Sophie Kinsella, Arthur Agatston, Tracy Chevalier, Rachel Johnson, Jonathan Lethem, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on February 21st, 2007.